Let's read together Job chapters 27 and 28. In these two chapters, we have the beginning of Job's last response to his three counseling friends. In chapter 27, Job again states his innocence, and in chapter 28, Job gives a wonderful description of wisdom. Let's begin by reading the first six verses of Job 27. Moreover, Job continued his discourse and said, "As God lives, who has taken away my justice, and the Almighty, who has made my soul bitter, as long as my breath is in me, and the breath of God in my nostrils, my lips will not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. Far be it from me that I should say, 'You are right.' Till I die, I will not put away my integrity from me. My righteousness I hold fast, and will not let it go. My heart shall not reproach or reprove me as long as I live." Let's begin our study of these two chapters of Job with some background notes. Now, as you read the commentaries on the book of Job, you will find that not everyone is agreed upon the right way to outline chapter 27. Eliphaz and Bildad spoke twice in the dialogues with Job. Where is Zophar's third speech? Well, some commentators say that beginning with verse 7 of Job 27, there is a third speech of Zophar. He's just not named. However, there is no need to have Zophar speak a third time. So we believe that Job chapter 27 and right on through Job 31 is all part of Job's final reply to all three of his counseling friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. And that brings us now to our doctrinal or teaching points for these two chapters, Job chapters 27 and 28. Doctrinal point number one, in his final response to his three friends, Job defends his position. In his final response to his three friends, Job defends his position. Chapter 27. In verses 1 through 6, the verses that we just read, again we see that Job acknowledges that it is God who is behind his suffering. Verse 2. Job doesn't understand why God is allowing him to suffer, but he knows that it is not because he has sinned, as his three friends have implied. For as long as he lived, Job claimed that he would hold fast to his innocence, his integrity, and his righteousness. Verses 3 through 6. Job was able to say in verse 6 that he lived with a clear conscience every day. Can we say that? Now in verses 7 through 12, Job calls for God's judgment on his enemies and those who would falsely accuse him. "May my enemy be like the wicked, and he who rises up against me like the unrighteous. For what is the hope of a hypocrite? Will God hear his cry when trouble comes upon him? I will teach you about the hand of God. Surely all of you have seen it. Why then do you behave with complete nonsense?" Now, it's important to notice in these verses that just as in the imprecatory or cursing Psalms, Job is not praying for God's judgment on his enemies just to get back at them for personal reasons or personal revenge. No, these opponents are godless, verse 8. They do not take delight in God or pray to God, verse 10. It seems like Job is saying to his three friends at this point, if the shoe fits, wear it. In other words, Job is telling his three friends that if they continue in their wrong line of counseling, they are putting themselves into the camp of the enemy, and they should know better. Verse 12, surely all of you have seen it. Why then do you behave with complete nonsense? Now in verses 13 through 23, Job speaks of the portion and fate of the wicked. This is the portion of a wicked man with God, and the heritage of oppressors received from the Almighty. If his children are multiplied, it is for the sword, and his offspring shall not be satisfied with bread. Those who survive him shall be buried in death, and their widows shall not weep. Though he heaps up silver like dust and piles up clothing like clay, he may pile it up, but the just will wear it, and the innocent will divide the silver. He builds his house like a moth, like a booth which a watchman makes. The rich man will lie down, but not be gathered up. He opens his eyes, and he is no more. Terrors overtake him like a flood. A tempest steals him away in the night. The east wind carries him away, and he is gone. It sweeps him out of his place. It hurls against him and does not spare. He flees desperately from its power. Men shall clap their hands at him and shall hiss him out of his place. When we read these verses, it almost sounds like Job is agreeing with his three friends. That is, the wicked suffer for their sins. But Job never disagreed with the truth that the wicked ultimately suffer for their sins. Where Job differed from his friends was in the fact that God has other reasons besides punishment for allowing people to suffer, and that he himself was not suffering for some hidden sin or sins. So here in these verses, Job affirms that indeed the wicked do suffer for their sins, even many times in this life. The children of the wicked die in war, and some starve to death, verse 14. Some die by plague with no widows to mourn them, verse 15. Their money and wardrobes and homes are short-lived and lost, verses 16 through 19. They are overtaken by terrors and natural disasters, verses 20 through 22. And their deaths are cheered by everyone, verse 23. In his final response to his three friends, Job defends his position. Doctrine point number two. In his final response to his three friends, Job describes God's wisdom. In his final response to his three friends, Job describes God's wisdom. Chapter 28. Let's read the first 11 verses. Surely there is a mine for silver and a place where gold is refined. Iron is taken from the earth, and copper is smelted from ore. Man puts an end to darkness and searches every recess for ore in the darkness and the shadow of death. He breaks open a shaft away from people, in places forgotten by feet. They hang far away from men. They swing to and fro. As for the earth, from it comes bread, but underneath it is turned up as by fire. Its stones are the source of sapphires, and it contains gold dust. That path no bird knows, nor has the falcon's eye seen it. The proud lions have not trodden it, nor has the fierce lion passed over it. He puts his hand on the flint. He overturns the mountains at the roots. He cuts out channels in the rocks, and his eye sees every precious thing. He dams up the streams from trickling. What is hidden, he brings forth to light. In these verses, we have a very interesting and fascinating description of ancient mining. Verse 4 is probably describing the technique of descending down a mine shaft in a swinging basket. Man, with his ingenuity and dedication, is able to go where birds and beasts never go, verses 7 and 8. Man is able to hew out channels and shafts through pure rock and find gold and obtain iron and copper from smelting and discover precious gemstones. Man can even dam up and divert flowing waters in his search for treasure, verse 12. Now the big question. What's Job's point of giving this fascinating description of mining for precious metals and gemstones? As we read verses 12 through 22, see if you can answer that question. That is, why in verses 1 through 11 did Job spend time describing ancient mining techniques? Let's read these verses. Job chapter 28, beginning now with verse 12. But where can wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. It cannot be purchased for gold, nor can silver be weighed for its price. It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir, in the precious onyx or sapphire. Neither gold nor crystal can equal it, nor can it be exchanged for jewelry of fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or quartz, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. From where then does wisdom come? And where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living. Verses 12 and 20 give us the key to answering our question about verses 1 through 11. That is, why did Job spend time describing ancient mining techniques? Verse 12, but where can wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? And verse 20, From where then does wisdom come? And where is the place of understanding? So Job's point is that although man is skilled and ingenious in mining and finding treasure in the earth, he cannot find wisdom, verses 12 through 14. And you can't buy wisdom, no matter how much material treasure you accumulate, verses 15 through 19. Wisdom is hidden from the living, who only have natural reasoning, verses 20 and 21. In death, a person finally realizes that there is wisdom, but they missed out on it in life, verse 22. The truth concerning wisdom comes now in verses 23 through 28. Let's read these verses. God understands its way, and he knows its place, for he looks to the ends of the earth and sees under the whole heavens to establish a weight for the wind and apportion the waters by measure. When he made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt, then he saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it indeed. He searched it out. And to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. God alone knows where wisdom is to be found, because he knows everything, verses 23 and 24. God established wisdom and used wisdom in his design of the universe, including its natural laws, verses 25 through 27. This wisdom is available to man, but we must look to God as the source of all wisdom and obey God for understanding truth, verse 28. The book of Proverbs rightly belabors this point that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge. Now, the New Testament scriptures certainly go along with Job's description of God's wisdom. Read Romans chapter 11, verse 33, which says, oh, the depth of the riches both of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. Romans 11, 33. In his final response to his three friends, Job describes God's wisdom. And that brings us to our practical application. Keep a clear conscience. Keep a clear conscience. Let's go back to verse 6 of chapter 27 for our practical application. My righteousness I hold fast and will not let it go. My heart shall not reproach or reprove me as long as I live, or for any of my days. Job says here that his heart would not reprove or reproach him as long as he lived, that is, for any of his days to come. What Job meant was that he continually lived with a clear conscience. Now, can we say that? We should all aim at being able to say that. Now, keeping a clear conscience means you don't do things that bother your moral conscience, or that you don't do things that you have misgivings or qualms about. And when your conscience does trouble you about something that you did or said, then you try to correct the situation to the best of your ability. Keep a clear conscience.